from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Montgomery, in for Michael Krasny. Well, activist Tom Hayden died last night in Santa Monica from complications from a stroke a year and a half ago. Hayden was a civil rights advocate who rode with the Freedom Riders in the South in the 1960s. He became most famous as an anti-war activist and founder of Students for a Democratic Society and for his marriage to actress Jane Fonda. Hayden was very active in California politics, serving the California Assembly and Senate, and mounting a failed bid for the governor's office. Joining us to remember Tom Hayden is Todd Gitlin. He's a professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. He also succeeded Tom Hayden as president of Students for a Democratic Society. Todd Gitlin, I want to welcome you to Forum. Todd Gitlin, are you out there?
I am here.
Oh, thank you.
Did you not hear me?
I didn't, but now we do hear you.
Okay.
I know this is a sad day for you and a lot of other people who knew Tom Hayden well. I want to just start. There are people out there who aren't that familiar with Tom Hayden, younger generation, people who weren't around for the Vietnam War. I want to just start to ask you how to summarize Tom Hayden's work and his legacy.
Well, he was really the inventor of a role. Nobody used the term activist at the time, hard as that may be to believe. When I say at the time, I mean in the early and even later 60s. He had begun as a journalist. He was a crusading editor of the University of Michigan newspaper against an authoritarian dean. He was deeply committed to civil rights and to a generalized revamp of American society, which sounds like an outlandish idea, but it was for most people. But his insight—he had many insights. He was very perceptive and eloquent, and had a knack of looking at a small question and seeing the bigger question lurking behind it. But one of his insights was that the issues were interrelated; that those people who were making life hard for civil rights were also making life hard for peace, were also making life hard for economic equality, were also making life hard for participatory democracy, which was a term that he borrowed from a University of Michigan political philosopher named Arnold Kaufman and made famous. That was an insight, and he was delivering it in both on paper and in person with extraordinary eloquence and intensity. And I think it has to be said that he was an inspiration for many, even those who disagreed with him about this or that particular strategy. He was pretty much unique as a rallying figure in for much of the 60s.
And actually remained very active up until near the end of his life.
Right. So this is very interesting because there were hundreds of thousands of people who passed through the New Left, but Tom was one of the very few who had it in him to take up a more conventional leadership role. After the militancy of the late 60s and early 70s had played out, he rolled up his sleeves. He took a good deal of anti-war energy to Washington to try to lobby Congress, much of it successful, to cut off funds for the Vietnam War. And then once he had come into money, thanks to Jane, he started the campaign for economic democracy in California. He'd moved to L.A. by this time, and he had the idea of winning influence and changing policy through elections. So he ran first for the Senate against the incumbent Democrat, John Tunney. He lost. And then he re-geared, rebooted, and started running for office himself. And he was in the state legislature for 16 years, I believe, eight in the Assembly and eight in the Senate, and both times getting term limited out. So he became a feet-on-the-ground activist who was able to do quite a lot with environmental questions and others, even though he was by this time somewhat saddled with the hostility that many felt him as a result of his role during the anti-Vietnam War.
Right, and I want to get to that in a moment. We're talking about Tom Hayden, activist Tom Hayden, who died last night in Santa Monica. We're talking to Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. What memories or questions do you have about Tom Hayden? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Todd Gitlin, I want to ask you, do you remember when or where the two of you first met?
Yeah, I do. I was a leader of the anti-nuclear war movement at Harvard, and it was my junior year, and I had helped organize a national demonstration that Tom and others from Students for Democratic Society, based then in Michigan, had taken part in. So Tom was a scout, I would say. He was traveling around meeting local activists. I was one of those. We hit it off.
You hit it off. What does that mean?
Sorry?
Wait, tell me more. You hit it off.
We thought similarly. I'm not sure what he saw in me. I saw in him a whole lot of energy and intelligence and thoughtfulness and a scope of vision, I would say. It was outlandish in those days. I'm talking about the spring of 1962. This was before the Port Huron Convention. It was outlandish to think big and at the same time keep your feet on the ground. And he knew a lot about the ground. He'd been in the South. He'd gotten beaten up in Mississippi. He'd written a pamphlet for SDS called Revolution in Mississippi. I mean, he had a sort of a local reputation, I would say. But what I saw was that he had a style of intellectual reach and intensity. I suppose you'd call it eloquence when it's delivered to a large crowd. But he was magnetic in those ways.
And he advocated, he didn't advocate violence, but certainly there were altercations, thinking particularly about Chicago. How did Tom Hayden at the time articulate his view on violent protests versus protests?
By 1967, I would suppose, certainly by early 1968, it wasn't so much that he advocated violence, but he stepped up to the line, and he had a view that the way to end the war by this time was to create a crisis in the country, to make the country ungovernable. So if that required putting yourself in a position as an activist where you might be triggering or instigating, well, that's not the right word exactly, but triggering chaos in the streets, that was beneficial. So that was his view in Chicago during the Democratic Convention in 68. Did he ever advocate violence? Not in so many words, but he was certainly on the edge of it or flirting with it by the early 70s, when I think he, like many others who'd been involved in the New Left now for 8 or 10 years, by this time he felt that nothing less than a sort of polarized right versus left civil war in of a sort was capable of redeeming the country. Now, what confused many people about Tom at this point was that with another part of his mind, he was still committed to working within the system. So he took a lot of flack on the left for being friendly with Bobby Kennedy. And I think Chicago and the Democratic election, in fact, the election of 1968, would have been remarkably different if Bobby Kennedy had lived. But once Martin Luther King was dead, once Bobby Kennedy was dead, I mean, as he once put it to me, the heroes had been decapitated.
Right.
And
right.
It was time to go for broke.
Well, and, you know, eventually his views shifted. But I mean, it seems, and I'm just looking at some comments we're getting, some of these things stuck with him, both the sort of radical politics of the 60s, but also his trips to Vietnam with Jane Fonda. You said he got criticized from some on the left and continued to do so, but also on the you're right, in terms of his positions on Vietnam and his you know, his decision to actually go to North Vietnam. Did he think about that late in life? Is that something that bothered him late in life, this continuing sort of vilification or certainly criticism of some of the things going back to the early 70s and late 60s? Or, in other words, did he have regrets?
Oh, yeah, he certainly had regrets about some of his moves. I don't think he ever regretted going to North Vietnam or trying to stop this ongoing massacre. I'm quite sure he never felt anything like that. He did, I mean, I don't know exactly what he specified. He thought that he overindulged the ultra-militancy. There was an incident a few months ago, actually. He helped organize a 40 years after the end of the Vietnam War conference in Washington last year. And at somewhere around there, somebody tried to get him to a meeting which Henry Kissinger would take part in, to appear on a stage with him. And he said, I'm paraphrasing here, he said, "I have long since acknowledged that I made mistakes. Henry Kissinger has never publicly acknowledged he had made any mistakes." Of course, Kissinger had gallons of blood on his hands, and so he declined to appear. So, you know, he was thoughtful. If you read his books, you read him, what other people, including me, have wrote about him, you'll see that he landed on his feet, and he thought that, you know, he did not think he was impeccable. He right. thought he'd made mistakes, as all activists do.
Right. And we're talking about activist Tom Hayden, who died last night. We're talking with Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. I want to go to John Burton, chair of the California Democratic Party and former served with Tom Hayden in the California legislature. John Burton, good morning.
Good morning.
Wanted to get your thoughts on Tom Hayden this morning. It's a sad day for many people who worked with Tom Hayden and who knew him. What are you thinking about today?
Well, surprisingly, I'm thinking about the two contributions he made as a member of the state legislature. One was he passed a bill to provide two tattoo removal machines from the prisons so that, you know, gang people that wanted to, you know, get rid of their gang past, et cetera, could get tattoo removals. And I remember when he put the bill and everybody thought it was kind of a wacky idea.
Right.
But it ended up passing. And then also he was responsible for what we call the scholar share bill, where parents and grandparents could put money into accounts for their children or their grandchildren for them to draw on when they go to college. I mean, two things that people would not necessarily associate, you know, with Tom. And, you know, we were active. He probably was a little bit more than me, but both very active in the anti-war movement, in the civil rights movements in the 60s. And he sometime, I don't think he regretted anything he did, maybe he did, but it sometime, you know, he took a lot of heat for the Vietnam thing and a couple other issues, and a couple right-wing members of the legislature actually wanted not to seat him, you know, which kind of, him and Julian Bond, you know, kind of a stupid thing. But Tommy later, I guess we both got a stroke at the same time. Mine was somewhat minor compared to his. And we would talk and, you know, compare medicines and compare doctors and compare BS. And he just, his, like I say, was a lot more severe than mine. And, you know, I'm doing fine. And, you know, Tommy's gone.
All right. John Burton, thanks for sharing your thoughts this morning. I want to
okay.
go to a caller, Craig in San Francisco. Good morning, Craig. You're on forum.
Good morning. It's good to be here. I'm the
thanks for joining us.
The former director of Tom Hayden's Campaign for Economic Democracy, CED, that was the political vehicle for Tom and many people that shared his perspective here in the Bay Area for 4 years from 82 to 86.
And tell me about the impact of that, particularly in the Bay Area.
Well, I think it had a significant impact that reflected in large part Tom Hayden's reach into so many different corners. For example, he maintained long-term relationships with activists, many of whom ran for office and served in local government. And we're talking not just dozens, but hundreds of people throughout the state that moved into positions. Some of them were water boards, some of them were city council members, others here in San Francisco on the Board of Supervisors, and county, other counties throughout Northern California. And Tom maintained a network that was critical of people who would come together and discuss several times a year the innovative policies that they were experimenting with in criminal justice, affordable housing, rent control, environmental policies. It was quite a network, and Tom made time to keep that group exploring and inquiring, both an intellectual and policy, grassroots policy kind of way. He also worked with a lot of young people here and helped get a Students for Economic Democracy project off the ground that worked with younger people on college campuses. And many of those people today are in positions of political responsibility, whether they're working for labor unions or social change organizations. So considerable reach, both here in the Bay Area as well as around the country.
All right, Neil, thanks for calling in. I want to take another... I'm sorry, that was Craig. Thanks for calling in, Craig. Let's go to Neil. Neil in San Francisco, you're on forum.
Yeah, Tom Hayden seemed evasive to the point of downright dishonesty on the subject of communism. He would not say anything about human rights abuses in communist countries, and he had nothing to say about the collapse of the Soviet Union. Do you have any idea why? Do you have any idea what his attitude towards communism actually was?
All right, Neil, why don't we take that question back to Todd Gitlin? Todd Gitlin, if you heard the caller question about Tom Hayden's attitudes towards communism, the fall of the collapse of the Soviet Union, was he evasive?
I can't say what he said about the collapse of the Soviet Union. I'm quite confident that he was jubilant about it. Early on in SDS, he, like others in the organization, were frowned upon communism, considered it, I think one of the terms he liked to use for it was a dinosaur, was not sympathetic to dictatorship. I think that it happened then through the Vietnam War. That in the late 60s, he became apologetic for North Vietnamese and sometimes other communist regimes. That was something I'm sure he regretted, and he came back from it.
I want to ask you how Tom Hayden, and I'm using this word cautiously, dealt with his celebrity. I mean, he married Jane Fonda. And it got a lot of attention. Did that change the way he approached living, as being in the public? How did that affect his life?
Well, I think it was very weird for him
right.
To be, first of all, to be, you know, the first husband or whatever you want to call it.
The first husband of Hollywood.
Jane Fonda's date at the ceremonies. I know he found it, I think, amusing. And I'm sure in part he reveled in it and in part he resented it. It was, this is America. This is what happens. Some people set out to be celebrities. I'm thinking about a certain person who informed us how hard he worked to, that he was really a veteran, living a dangerous life in the 1960s when he was struggling to steer clear of sexually transmitted diseases. Tom was authentically a hero and authentically courageous, and he had great, you know, he was magnetic. So, you know, on a smaller scale, he was already, you know, a luminous figure in the New Left, you know, before he met Jane. But I'm sure it was all very complicated.
Right. A couple of comments. Jan writes, "Bless Tom Hayden's activist heart. A listener tweets, please comment on Hayden's reported abusive treatment of women. Todd Gitlin, any thoughts on that question or that thought?
Abusive treatment of women. Well, I lived with him for a year. I never saw him abusive toward women. Or heard anybody else say he was, actually. I mean, none of us were saints in those years, or still. But no, I've never heard anything like that.
All right, let's take another caller. Ted in San Francisco, you're on forum.
Hi, yeah, I'm you know, sad at Tom Hayden's passing, and I had the opportunity. I'm a anti-war activist myself, and you know, I was a kid when Tom Hayden was active in the '60s. But I had the chance in 2005 to go to Jordan with Tom Hayden. It was the beginning of 2005, a very bleak moment for the anti-war movement with George W. Bush having been reelected. And I traveled with Tom, who had – we both had connections in Jordan. And so we sat down with opposition groups. And Tom was seeing this and explaining it to the Iraqi exiles and others that we were meeting with as parallel to what he'd done in the 1960s, going to Vietnam as a young student activist with the other groups that really pushed and opened up the Paris peace talks and whatnot. So he was trying to do that right up into the last part of his life. And I think that a lot of that fell through because I think both Tom and I, after being there, realized the extent to which we were in over our heads, the fact that there were no state actors that could actually be brought to bear in terms of the opposition to the U.S. occupation and whatnot. And so there's really no – it was very hard to have a discussion or to be NGO promoters of it. But I saw Tom, even at that part of his life, as – incredibly engaging. The Iraqi exiles, they all knew who he was. You know, his fame was international for sure. And, you know, I saw him working on all kinds of international issues, including the I was very much involved in the support for the Zapatista communities in Chiapas. Tom was right there. He at the very end of his life, has been working on, the gang issues in Central America,
And in Los Angeles, for that matter, right?
It's just fantastic, man. Thank you very much for letting me have my say.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Todd Gitlin, I want to go back to you. And so Tom Hayden started out supporting Bernie Sanders, but then shifted his support to Hillary Clinton. What's your thinking on that?
I don't know the fine grain of it. I don't know the ins and outs, but it's pretty clear to me, and I think he said this at the time, that he realized at a certain point that Bernie wasn't going to win the nomination, and he thought it was crucial, absolutely crucial to the end, that people work hard to put in the White House a woman who was a grown-up, who was intelligent, whose values were decent, and whose place in the White House was not only valuable in its own right and not only valuable because of who it would keep out, but because her administration would be a platform on which people could organize to push the envelope, to find an effective way of making reforms, and not because she was the be-all and end-all, not because any president was a be-all and end-all, but because in politics, one thing you do is you elect presidents. Other things you do are work for reforms as on a local level, a state level. You try to change laws, and you also resort to civil disobedience or whatnot when appropriate. But he was, in that sense, as John Burton was saying, memorably, during his, 16 years as an elected official, he got a lot done. He believed in getting things done.
He tuned in.
He did not believe in shaking the heavens with oratory.
Right. We're going to hear a short clip of tape from Tom Hayden. This is a press conference back in October 1969. He is was one of the defendants in the trial of the Chicago 7. We talked about that briefly. And he's offering his view on the prosecutor's case. Todd, can you just briefly give us some background on the Chicago 7 case? We touched on it, and then we'll hear the clip.
Chicago 7 was not a group anybody joined. It was a group established by Richard Nixon's
wasn't a rock band.
Department. which prosecuted them absurdly for organizing people to cross state lines to commit riot. They had an absurd trial with a clueless judge, a prejudiced judge, they were eventually, some of them were convicted of a number of lesser charges, and then eventually won their appeal. So that's the moment.
All right, let's hear the clip.
So what we're on trial for is our hair, our appearance. He asks policemen, and did Mr. Rubin look differently last year? Yes, he did. He had long hair, and apparently the fact that we use profanity out in public instead of in our bedrooms is another piece of evidence being used against us. That we're seen on the streets of Chicago is another incident.
And that's Tom Hayden talking at a press conference in 1969. Tom Hayden, activist, died last night in Santa Monica. Todd Gitlin, a touch of humor there.
Oh, never at a loss for words and never at a loss for a wink. I heard somebody say when on hearing Tom speak a couple of years ago that he hadn't known that there was a leprechaun in him, and that's what it was. Yes, that is what it was. He was, after all, Irish.
Right. And so just going back to his legacy, we just have a minute or so left. What do you think Tom Hayden will be remembered most for? And I'm thinking for younger activists. You've written a lot about younger activists. What do you think he'll be remembered for?
Well, he did draft the Port Huron Statement, which was the most vivid and eloquent and encompassing of the manifestos that came out of the 1960s. He was a pragmatist about politics. He tried this, and if that didn't work, he tried something else. So he could be both a street fighter and a politician. I think his endurance, his persistence, virtual indefatigability, I think, deserves to be noted. I saw him discouraged. He never quit. I think all that makes him a considerable figure.
All right. Todd Gitlin, thanks for joining us. Todd Gitlin is professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. We've been talking about activist Tom Hayden, who passed away last night. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lorberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Schofer-Wolf. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Joanne Wallace. I'm Michael Montgomery. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.